One thing that I would like to emphasize is I'm going to try to go through one specific analysis that we did to try to pinpoint what are going to be the challenges that agriculture will face if we want to make biofuels a significant player in the portfolio of transportation fuels. As it was said before, we know how to do it. So if we want to live with an ethanol industry that produces 200 million or a billion gallons, I mean, yeah, we can do it. That's a big deal. But I think the opportunity is how far can we take it? And if we take it that far, for instance, in this case, 25% of the total use of energy, what are the likely impacts and challenges that we are going to have to face? Just to put a little bit of context, okay, just to remind ourselves, because some of these issues are going to come along the discussion, it's about 2.5 billion people, almost a third of the population of the world, depend directly or indirectly from agriculture. About 800 million are food insecure. In developing countries, agriculture accounts for 50% of the employment, and in some cases above that, and 50% of GDP, and in many countries between 30 and 45. Agriculture also is an ecosystem-based enterprise, which is we have learned to move factories, we have learned yet to move land, and that comes into the picture later on too. And finally, biofuels is a kind of the perfect link between energy and agriculture, but it's no different than the one that we have 150 years ago between mules and agriculture. Mules eat hay, agriculture produce hay. The more mules we had, the more demand for energy that we had to produce from agriculture. We are just taking this to a different dimension. Oops. In terms of production, what have we seen in the last 40 to 50 years? We have seen a steady increase in production in almost every other region of the country. We can pick the ones that have grown the faster or the ones that has grown the lower, but the general trend has been positive. If we look at how far has the change in domestic consumption or food security evolved, we can look at what is the minimum requirement in terms of caloric intake and how different regions have moved away from that. Okay? My only point here is to do two things. Production has been increasing, demand has been increasing too, but at the same time, agricultural prices have been decreasing tremendously since the mid-70s. And if we remember that 2.5 billion depend on agriculture, 2.5 billion people have to live on their income and investment on these kind of prices. So this is where biofuels come into the picture. Okay, this is where biofuels, this additional demand to the agricultural sector comes into the picture as a way of bringing opportunities. If we were, and nobody, I think nobody in his sane mind is thinking about it, if we were to replace all the gasoline consumption with either sugar or corn, we would have to use 300 million hectares of sugar, 600 million hectares of corn, one or the other, and about 225 million hectares of palm. Roughly speaking, that is more than half of the total cultivable area, arable area in the world. The only point of this is the massive demand that brings energy into agriculture. That is just to put it in that dimension. The other good thing about agriculture is that it matches very well with a different source, different energy services, electricity, diesel, ethanol. But beyond that, we know that the matrix of fuels is even larger than that. We have the Fischer-Tropsch processes that can provide much more diverse set of fuels, and also the fact that eventually it can even transform into hydrogen. So that is one of the advantages between looking at solar or looking at wind, in which the sources of energy services truly spread around. And the same thing with the feedstocks. I mean, we normally hear about sugar and corn because those are the two which have the starch base, sugar base, and have been so far the drivers of the system. And both have their plus and minuses, but the thing is that as technology moves forward, and we have already heard 205 times the fact that the second generation biofuels is coming, the idea there is that the potential of opening up the set of biofuels available for agriculture. And when you open up the set of biofuels, what you basically open up is the geographic delineation which the feedstocks can be grown. In another word, you are spreading the risk, spreading the benefit at the same time. So let's look at what will it take, or what would happen if we pursue this 25 by 25 strategy, which is 25% of the total renewables, of the total U.S. consumption should be renewable by the year 2025. And we'll show in this graph what does it mean in terms of transportation fuels only, gasoline. In terms of gasoline, it implies producing 86 billion gallons, which is roughly more than 10 times as we produce currently of ethanol. If to this we add the 25% that will go to electricity, we basically double that 86 billion gallons to the equivalent of 200 billion gallons. So what we are talking about here is really pushing agriculture to limits that probably today we are not really pursuing, we are just evaluating, if you wish, or assessing. Now, we have domestically a limited amount of land that we can use to produce those fuels. And in our analysis, what we have are the land in the major crops, the land in hay, the land in CRP, and the land in what we can call pasture land, range lands. Not cropland planted to pasture, but range land in general. And that is about major crops, 400 million hectares, 434 million acres, excuse me, and pasture land and range land, about almost 400 million acres. And the idea here, as you will see, is not how to produce crops in pasture land, but the question is, how can we increase the forage productivity of that pasture land in order to release cropland that is currently being used to produce forage, basically hay and the cropland that is being used for pasture, about 55 to 60 million acres. Assumptions, just a few of them, just to make it transparent. Crops, we are not as aggressive as Monsanto would like to be, 185 bushels per acre by the year 2025, which is slightly above the current trend in the USDA baseline. Soybean, 51 bushels per acre, wheat and energy crops between 6 to 12, because those are largely going to vary nationally. Management practices, if we are looking into including residues into the feedstock, set of feedstock, obviously we have to pursue management practices that are far above increase the amount of residues. And that's why both no-till and reduced till are pushed to rates higher than the national average that we see today. Now, in order to produce this much ethanol equivalent, when we're talking about 86 billion gallons of ethanol plus a similar number in the equivalent for electricity, we are talking that at the first, as we have seen today, the yellow area is the corn base. And to the year 2012-2014, until the cellulosic to ethanol option doesn't come into play, that is where the industry is going to keep growing. And as the cellulosic to ethanol comes into the picture, the idea here is that the availability of feedstock, first wood residues, then crop residues, are going to push a little bit the prices of corn further down, and are going to also be used as a feedstock. Now, the key issue here is that if we really want to develop a significant biofuels industry, 25% of the total demand of energy of the U.S., basically what we have to rely is in cellulosic. Not only because the availability of the feedstock, but also because of the conversion factor of the feedstock. I don't think Monsanto has to worry about, because they can buy another company to make up for the corn that they may lose. So I don't think it's a big deal there. Now, in order to produce that acreage, what kind of changes in land use could we expect? Well, I mean, if we're going to, first of all, that implies bringing a whole new industry, which is the energy dedicated crops industry, in this particular case of the model switchgrass, to about 105 million acres, okay, by the year 2025. 105 million acres. It's huge, no question about that. Now, we have seen similar changes, and we have seen similar changes when we talk about soybeans. I mean, soybeans basically went from nothing to the second major crop in the U.S. Not so much to 105, but also soybeans had a much more restricted geographic area. So we have seen that before. So that is no big deal. The question is, where is the land going to come? And the biggest challenge is exactly what I was talking about at the beginning. This area here is the total pasture, rangeland and pasturing cropland. The question is, can we increase the forage productivity through fertilization or management intensity of this pasture land in order to produce enough forage to release to a large extent about 60 million acres that are in hay today of cropland? And all other changes that we would expect to see is a slight reduction in the area of corn and a more significant reduction in both wheat and soybeans. And it's not like corn and soybeans are going to disappear from the Midwest. What is going to happen is that the quotation marginal areas of wheat and soybeans, which is basically the southeast and the surrounding belt of the corn belt, probably is going to switch away from corn and soybeans towards, in this particular case, energy crops. So this is the kind of change in terms of land use that we would expect to see in order to produce enough feedstock in order to achieve this 25 by 25 goal. Now, if we look at changes in prices, and given the speed that we assume for the corn demand, what we don't see is spikes in the demand for corn. We'll see that a little later in a sensitivity analysis. So what we basically see is that, yes, corn prices are going to be an increasing trend towards the future to basically relatively increases close to between 30% and 40%, depends if we're talking about corn and soybeans, by the year 2025, 30% and 40% from the baseline for that year, which is, in the case of corn, is about $3. A comparable price that will have to be paid for energy crops at this price level will be about $82 per dry ton. Now, $82 per dry ton at the technology that we assumed in 2025, which is about 100 gallons per dry ton, will end up producing an ethanol at the cost of $1.60. We don't see significant changes in the cost of ethanol if that trend of demand for especially corn is maintained. Now, what is the difference here? The difference is, let's say that cellulosic to ethanol doesn't become available until the year 2015, and that we don't modify our target for the total ethanol production. So what we will see is exactly what we see today. Without modifying, without changing the target demand, what we will see is that both corn, wheat, and soybeans will have, by the year 2015, significant price increases. And that is kind of the picture that we are seeing today. The demand is growing far, far more rapidly than what the supply can respond to. And therefore, there's no surprise that we see these price increases of between 70 to 150%, depending on the crop and the year, in these major crops. So this describes the situation in which we are involved. That if we continue to push the increasing use and demand without a corresponding push in the supply side, where we're going to run into a significant increase in prices, even larger than the one that we are seeing today, and shooting the whole biofuels dream in the foot. And one of the things we have to think about is that it's not only the biofuels issue. What we have been running in the last 5 to 6 years is at level of inventories which are far, far below the historical level of inventories, corn grains and feeds in general, which means that small distortions in weather patterns in significant producing countries, whereas the US, Brazil, Argentina, are going to have a dramatic increase in these prices. And on top of that, if we bring the biofuels demand, what we may be setting up ourselves is to price increases that will really trigger, or has the potential to really trigger, a significant high price crisis. I just say that because I think that it is important to keep in perspective the growth of the industry with the ability of the industry to provide for the feedstock and for the fuel conversion itself. Now, if we look at where the cellulosic material could be harvested from, and we look at the year 2025 to make things shorter, we'll see basically that most of the U.S. gets involved in the industry, whether in the production of corn and residues, in the production of energy crops and wood residues here too. And the point here is that the whole impact of the industry is expanded geographically. That by itself comes with a mirror image with the benefits, that the benefits of the farm sector are also accrued across the country. And those probably are the two largest contributions of opening up the feedstock industry beyond corn. If we look at changes in net farm income, what this possibility could be opening up is an increase in net farm income of about $40 billion by the year 2025, almost doubling in real terms the current level of farm income. It's not so much, though, 80% probably. Now, what we don't know here is who is going to get that farm income. Because one thing is that as the industry innovates, and we're talking about both the seed industry and the machinery industry, I mean, usually the pricing mechanism is going to be used pricing at the margin, which means if I save you $10 per acre, I will charge you $9.50 for the technology. And we have seen that, so it's not like we lack data on that. So that's another thing about the challenges that Richard Cruz presented at the beginning. It matters who has control of the value added. In terms of national impacts, this whole industry, not only the farm level, but the conversion level, has the potential of generating about 5 million new jobs across the nation. And an industry value at about $700 billion. So in that sense, we are talking about a mammoth change that could bring to agriculture and a time of unprecedented growth. Now, there are some market-driven breaks that we have to be aware of. I mean, if the price of oil, either because we're producing too much biofuels or other sources of energy, drops, then the incentive for biofuels is going to drop. And at the same time, one thing that we have to learn is the more that we produce biofuels, the more we're going to have to pay for the feedstock. I mean, it may be that we can bring one or two technological shifts, and because of that technological shift, we can increase the supply to the point in which we can drop the price. But once that shift has been introduced, the more we use it, the more we have to pay for it. Therefore, don't expect cheap ethanol. Opportunities then, very simple, a new demand for energy, total of about 15 quads, and those 15 quads are about close to 200 billion, the equivalent of 200 billion gallons of ethanol. Total farm income that can be generated, $180 billion by the year 2025. We, If we maintain the 2002 Farm Bill, which we are not, but we had to have a reference, we could have saved up to $100 billion and create an industry of $700 billion and 5-2 new jobs. Most of them, indeed, are going to be located in rural America. Now, what are the challenges? The most obvious challenge for this path is that cellulose to ethanol has to be available sometime soon, 2012, 2015. If not, what we have to do is be much more humble in the target. Now, for the ones who have been hearing about the cellulose to ethanol industry, I have been told that 30 years ago, that technology was 5 years from becoming a reality. The only difference that I will say between today and 30 years ago is that we are seeing probably unprecedented investment, both public and private, in that area. Now, if what it takes to do this is to generate an energy crop industry or sector that basically will take close to 100 million acres, well, we have to generate the information for the extension service, for the farmers, for the handlers, in order to disseminate that knowledge and make it as efficient as possible. So it's not a trivial task. At the same time, input availability. And we are talking in Tennessee about trying to plant next year close to 1,000 acres of switchgrass. Well, it has been almost an impossible task to get seeds for 1,000 acres of switchgrass. So the idea there is that there has to be a significant development in that industry in order to make it happen. And one has to look, as it was said before, at the different dots. And the different dots have to come into the picture at the right time. The same thing not only with the seed, but the harvesting method, the harvesting equipment, and so forth. Yield gains are a must. In general. I mean, there's no question about that we will be the better off the more we can get in terms of productivity from the land. Logistics, we also have heard a lot about the challenges in terms of logistics for this new industry, moving the feedstock. It's like trying to move tons and tons of hay to a single point, a plant. And the thing is that we probably can do it in one or two or three or five plants, but when we have hundreds of plants, almost thousands of plants, in terms of not only the distribution of the feedstock to the plant, but also the product from the plant to the market, that brings a significant challenge. Because the cellulosic feedstock, the same thing with hay, is a lot of volume, a little weight. But there is no reason why it cannot be thought about a cousin of the cotton industry. Nobody sells cotton to a textile plant. All the cotton has to go through a cotton gin. Well, probably that is the challenge that will have to go in that sense with cellulosic ethanol. There has to be a middle conversion point that will increase the efficiency and the volume from the farm to that collection point, and then from that collection point to the final user. We are talking about the need to increase, to achieve this goal, between 500 and 1,000 new plants. The distribution of ethanol, the challenges, and the fact that we are going to have to really develop infrastructure in E85. So at the end, I truly think that we have the potential there. I don't think that we are facing with a situation in which we are going to aggravate so far or so much the current food, fuel, feed, and fiber contradiction. What these prices are basically putting forward is how in the last 45 years we, the national community, have forgotten to invest in agriculture. So the lack of ability of developing countries to respond to these increasing prices is not necessarily because prices are too high, but because agriculture has not been treated as it was treated in the US or Europe, as a key sector for development. So here, the challenge is, how do we reorient the priorities? And the priorities in terms of increased productivity for the production of food, and especially domestic food. Investments have to be ahead of the curve. We are looking at examples in which the demand is really going far, far faster than the production in these last 2 years. And the thing is that what we should strive for is to have this additional investment in agronomics, in conversion, and in distribution, in order to have the supply catch up with this new demand. Government policy has to be consistent with the speed of adoption. Today, I will argue today that we have probably too much new plants of ethanol at least being on the plants. Well, this is the time to revisit and excise a blender subsidy that was designed when gasoline was priced, or oil was priced, at $20 or $25. When oil is at $20 or $25, probably the 51 or 54 cents makes sense. Now, if we had it at $92, probably doesn't make much more sense. Therefore, there have to be some breaks into the whole strategy of pushing the industry forward. And finally, which we don't talk here, but I'm glad that was mentioned earlier, there are significant environmental and social challenges coming from this push to ethanol. First of all, what we could see is that truly farmers may not be switchgrass farmers anymore, because to a large extent, the kind of attention that switchgrass requires relatively to a crop is significantly less. Okay, there is no planting, there is relatively small management, so it's very well suited for what I will call at this point massive plantations. And as research shows, there is a difference in the pattern of expenditure in a rural community when the ownership is local, whether it's the farm or the processing company, or the ownership lies outside of the local community. That in the social aspects. And in the environmental aspects, there's no question about that the single most important issue is water. The second most important issue probably is, are we going to look at the productivity of the land as a key asset? And here, what we have done when we look at residues is at least give a minimum requirement that in order to be able to take residues out at any cost, the T values for every single soil need to be committed or fulfilled. The question now is, as a research group, whether those T values are sufficient enough to ensure the sustainability of the land. With that, I just would like to finish and open if there's any questions.
Go ahead.
I'd like to commend you on those excellent talk. I'd like to ask you to comment on using the cellulose ethanol. There are some discussions, particularly when I talked to Michael Antal this spring, that if we can get technology there to, on this farm, produce a form of coal like chalk, which is, in fact, he calls it a green coal. Mike Lantel, one of the leading hydrogen in the world, told me that's his interest. Because he thought that the technology that might give you a fuel in the next 5 years rather than the next 35 years might be the already existing technology for coal. What was going to be important was for us to be able to produce a green coal. And then he thought this charcoal, and he had put the mouth, money was out there, but it was invention in that flash. What do you think about changes that may go in that direction, which would allow us to get this dense product and be able to move that?
I think one of the things that we are starting to become more and more aware is that we are totally obsessed with ethanol. While ethanol is not the only product, fuel, that can be produced from agriculture, even from the same kind of feedstock. So slowly what we are seeing is that there are conversion processes, and one of those is the one that you mentioned, that it provides the opportunity, one, to produce the fuel, but at the same time to concentrate the residue. And in some cases, maybe in a carbon-rich product, which is a solid and can be used to enrich the soil, and in the other is a charcoal-ready product. So what we are starting to see is that all of these efforts that have been undergone for the last probably 20 years are coming up to the light in this biofuels frenzy. But what is making us aware is the fact that we are way too focused on ethanol. And I think that here is when we are probably missing the real philosophy of the land-grant universities. A very small land-grant university funding is going through that avenues of research, and one can imagine that probably there may be ways to speed that up if we were go back to some of the same patterns of investment and research that we had in the past.